Beth stopped for a drive-through espresso on her way home from the church missions committee meeting. She hoped a shot of industrial-strength caffeine might tone down the headache throbbing in her temples. While she waited, she kept replaying the meeting in her mind. Everyone on the committee seemed to love Jesus and care about missions. So why were their meetings so frustrating? Another evening had been spent in misunderstanding and cross-purposes, with nothing finally accomplished. Despite their obvious concern for missions, Beth was beginning to wonder if they actually meant the same thing by that word. Dave began the meeting, chastising the committee for its myopic focus on evangelism. "What about the poor, the hungry, the oppressed?" he asked. "Isn't it the mission of the church to care for all their physical needs, too?" And Olivia again suggested it would be so much better and cheaper to pay local pastors than to send out Western missionaries. Then there was Harold's comment. He had just read some study describing a new method that some missionary organization used to produce 87% more decisions for Christ among Muslims than merely preaching the gospel from the Bible. Was a statistical study really the best way to decide what methods to employ? And what exactly were those Muslims deciding? Patricia pressured the committee to stop supporting full-time missionaries altogether and instead focus on sending people overseas with their jobs. "The old model of churches sending supported, long-term workers is just outdated in our modern global economy," she asserted. "Business as missions is the only way to go." Beth agreed this could be a good thing to encourage, but she was pretty confident the Apostle John's command that we ought to support church-sent missionaries, that we may be fellow workers for the truth, still applied. 3 John verse 8. But when Beth read that passage out loud, Patricia just rolled her eyes and encouraged her to stop looking backward and embrace the next wave of missions. And of course, Clarence concluded the meeting by encouraging them, again, to focus more on short-term trips rather than funding more long-term workers. "Short-term trips can be life-changing for our people," he reminded them, just before launching into the familiar story about his trip to paint a community center in Guatemala and how it had transformed his faith. But Beth wondered if those kinds of trips were really the best use of their mission's funds and a missionary's time. The click of the drive-through window startled Beth out of her reflections. As she drove away nursing her double shot, she had a growing sense that there must be a better way. Surely God must have given more direction about what the mission is and how we should pursue it, but she couldn't think of where to find that direction or where to start. Sadly, I don't think Beth is alone. In many of our churches today, well-meaning people seem to struggle with the concept of missions. They want to see Christ glorified and honored. They care about the needs of people. But in practice, their pursuit of missions often devolves into a frantic hunt for new ideas, competition over church resources, and disagreements over method. The good news of this little book is that it doesn't have to be that way. Imagine a local church where the congregation's mission to the nations is clear and agreed upon. Elders guide the congregation towards strategic missions. Missions is held up as a concern for all Christians, not just the niche missions club. The tyranny of new trends and demands for immediate, visible results holds no sway. Members see missions as the work of the church together.